good morning, good morning, good morning. How are you, how are you, how are you, as Arthur Godfrey used to say. If you're that old, and that's pretty old to remember Arthur Godfrey. Hey, it's Terrible Tommy here in the bunker on Moonsday morning, and it is the 8th of February, 2016. Beautiful day here in the Midwest. We had a nice sun. It's getting a little cloudy now, but boy, I was out in the yard. I was up on top of a tree, pruning a tree. But I don't have too good a luck pruning trees. The last tree I pruned died. I hope this one does better, but I got it all trimmed out, boy. It's a pear tree. The limbs get so high I can't get up to get the pears off of it. It's so loaded with pears it breaks off limbs from the weight of the pears, man. They're great pears. They don't really get ripe until the deep fall, and they're pretty hard as a rock, but it's a sweet pear. I love them. I love those pears. And we're still at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show. We got quite a few in here already for this month, and also donations for POWs and so forth. Like I said last week, we sent a few money orders out to the boys, and so it's going to make them happy. And I resubscribed to Mother Jones for Richard's guitar. He likes that Mother Jones magazine, and so he's got that for another year. And I sent a few books out, too, to POWs, plus the other little bits of information we sent out to the newcomer POWs that enjoy to get some information. And we sent several of our old papers out. And we got some papers left from the old days, and I sent three or four out to a guy in California. He loves them, passes them around to the other inmates. He's lucky. Now, most of the other prisons won't let him in, but for some reason, he's lucky enough to get him in. I don't know. Well, I forgot to tell you, on the 4th, that was the commemoration of Robert Miles. Yeah, Reverend Robert Miles, his attack on the system. That was when they were busing little white kids into black schools up there in Michigan. Well, Robert Miles took everything in hand and went out and torched a whole bunch of school buses as a symbolic act. Obviously, it's the middle of the night and there's no kids around, but nobody in danger, all empty. But they gave him 10 years, needed 10 years straight time. Now, if hundreds of people around the country would have done the same thing at the same time, that would have made a lot of difference. But the problem is that a lot of times some selfless acts don't get anywhere because, you know, only one or two people do it, you know. So it's, but anyhow, I commend Robert Miles for the great symbolic service he gave and the 10 years he had to do in prison in trying to help the white kids in this country. I remember I was writing him all the time. Most of the time he was in prison, I remember sending him some shoes because he had a problem with shoes in the prison. I know that Loeb down in Florida has a problem with shoes too. Down there, they're not giving prisoners shoes. They may give them these little, plastic kind of stuff, but isn't that sickening that they want to rehabilitate people, but they want to treat them so badly that why would they want to be rehabilitated? There's a movie out now called Hail Caesar, and it's sort of a comedy and sort of realistic. I mean, it's about the 50s and 60s and about the communist struggle and all that that a lot of us spent a lot of our time into and really didn't accomplish a goddamn thing. Spent a lot of money. Drove all over the place, demonstrated all kinds of stuff. Well, anyhow, in this movie, they brought out about Herbert Marcuse because it was about a bunch of guys in Hollywood that joined the Communist Party. But it was done in a comedy way. It wasn't that, oh my God, they're coming to get you like we all fell for. You know, if you're old enough, you know that's what it was. We were petrified. The Russians were coming. When in fact, it was the military-industrial complex of this country that put out most of the fear and scared the bejesus out of the Russians. And now we used to think it was the other way around. Well, as far as I'm concerned, two-thirds of the Cold War was simply big companies making a lot of money building weapons and building atomic bombs and so forth. And remember, the Russians were panic-stricken because we had the bomb, and they were desperate to get the bomb to obviously protect themselves. So anyhow, I'll go on from there on about that later. If you got any questions, you can ask me. But you're not going to get it from the right wing, because any of the right wing, because they're still into this anti-Russian phobia that they've got. Well, anyhow, Herbert Marcuse was the chief theoretician professor of the Communist Party, USA. He was up at Stanford, I believe it was, and then he came down to San Diego. This is a little interesting story of my own, and I've told you about my somewhat connections to the Minutemen, but not a member. But anyhow, after the Minutemen were gone, there developed a group called the Secret Army Organization in San Diego. And they were recruiting guys, and I was leery right from the start of that, because they sent me a thing in the mail, said, you're invited to the Secret Army Organization picnic in Balboa Park, right in the middle of San Diego. And I got bad vibes about that. If you're going to be a Secret Army organization, what are you having picnics in the park with the kiddies? You know, but anyhow, I was on the periphery of what was going on, knew some people involved with it. And I knew one guy who was one of the leaders of the Secret Army organization. The head guy, his name was Fox. He owned a gas station down in San Diego. But this guy, I forget this guy's name, he was sort of a mountain man. He was a great big guy, a great big beard, and he was a mountain man. He lit his pipe and everything with the flint and all that kind of stuff. Well, anyhow, he told me that he went out to his chicken house one morning in Lakeside, California. And guess what he found there in his chicken house? A brand new military issue flamethrower. He said, "Whoa, what the hell is this?" Well, it's obvious that the FBI or some or military group of some type had set him up. And he was fortunate enough to discover it in time to get rid of the damn thing, dump it, get it out of there, so they never got him for it. But if they'd raided the place and found that there, with him not even knowing about it, they'd have given him 10, 15, 20 years, you know. So anyhow, as the story goes, the Secret Army organization was infiltrated, as usual. I ran into a guy later that knew all about it. In fact, he was, I think, involved in the infiltration. But there's a young man by the name of a patriot, as you know how that goes, a patriot. And I think he was a Vietnam veteran, Mickey Hoover. And he was sort of brainwashed into going out and get Herbert Marcuse. He was going to knock off Herbert Marcuse. And which wouldn't have changed a damn thing, because, but still, at the time, during the communist hysteria, it seemed very logical. Well, anyhow, this infiltrator, FBI informant, took him out, and they were in a car, and went out there to, I think it was Point Loma in San Diego, or out that way someplace, where Marcuse lived in an apartment. And they pulled up in front of the place, and the guy, the infiltrator, hands Mickey Hoover the gun. There's your first tip-off. I've seen that happen before. It happened in L.A. when some yin-yang talked a guy into trying to assassinate Irv Rubin, you know. And they did the same thing, drove right up in front, and then they handed him the gun, you know. Well, the These guys should have been a little smarter than that. Why would he hand me the gun? Well, anyhow, he took a couple of shots through the window of Marcuse's apartment. He didn't hit Marcuse, but he did injure slightly a girl by the name of Paula Tharp, who was a student at the university. I think it was mainly from flying glass. Well, anyhow, right away they grabbed Hoover and tried him, and boy, they sent him up to Soledad Prison. Well, when I got the information from my deep throats there that were involved or knew who was involved, I went to a reporter I knew with the San Diego Union that was pretty friendly, told him the whole story, how Mickey Hoover had been set up and guided into this thing by FBI informants. And he investigated it, went up to the prison and talked to Hoover. And I forget whether he threatened to write the article about the whole thing, or he did write the article about the whole thing, but it was only about 2 weeks until Mickey Hoover was out of Soledad and on the street. So I saved his ass, I'll tell you that. He's a lucky guy. He ended up working on a ranch, I think, up in Montana or something. So anyhow, that's what happened. That's why, you know, when I tell you things, it's the reason I tell you is because I know how these guys operate. And I know if you get involved with these outfits like that, you're going to get burned. And once you're in there, just like Mahon and these guys, once you're in there, they don't want to let you ever go. They want you to die in prison. And I'm afraid Mahon will end up dying in prison. Because of that stupid gal he's being set up by that stupid whore down in Arizona, and she was talked into it and paid big money by the ATF. So these people are brutal. They'll try to talk people into all kinds of shit, and if you get in these groups and, you know, they go, rah, 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 let's save the white race, let's kill somebody. Well, you're going to go down, and you're going to go down for a long time. Believe me, when a revolution starts, you'll know it. You'll know it. It's going to come from many factions, too. That's what's interesting about it. It's not just going to be white people. It's going to be black people, brown people, all kinds of people, if a revolution ever starts in this country. Anyhow, that's a little story I thought you might be interested in hearing. Herbert Marcuse died of natural causes, but in reality, the Communist Party didn't really hurt the United States at all, except stealing the atom bomb secrets. And I don't even know whether that was actually Communist Party members. I know Oppenheimer was giving secrets away, and then of course you had all the Jews, the Jew spies, you know, Judith Copeland and a whole bunch, Whitaker Chambers, Alger Hiss, Whitaker Chambers exposed out Alger Hiss, and then you had the what was the couple that was spies? Anyhow, they were executed in the electric chair. Rosenbergs. I see their kids are writing books and stuff like that, trying to mitigate the things they did and all that kind of stuff. Actually, this Jew that's been in prison quite a long time, and they're going to let him out, I guess. Or did they leave him out? I forgot his name now. He should have been put in the electric chair probably, because he probably did more harm to the federal secrets than the Rosenbergs. But anyhow, the Cold War was, you know, half Cold War and half bullshit. And all these big companies like Lockheed and all these big companies made fortunes off of it. And they're still making fortunes off weapons. Now they want to make a lot more weapons, and Obama wants to spend billions more. He don't say, I want to spend billions on black people, does he? He wants to spend billions of building more weapons and firing more weapons, Now they're all excited, the military-industrial complex, of getting into Asia, back into Asia. Every 20, 30 years, you get out of one and want to get back into another. People forget, you know, a generation forgets the new generation. And instead of saying, this is bullshit, we're not going to do it anymore, they want to jump back into it. And it's always to save the country. Never save the race. Save the country. You know, say, believe me, the country's going to be here. The country's not going to go away. But people go away, that's for sure. Anyhow, the Secret Army Organization, the Minutemen, the Order, the Second Order, God, there's a whole bunch more I can, if I have a little time, I could remember. They were all, had good intentions, but they all were infiltrated and screwed before they even got off the ground. That's the easy way the feds do their business, you know. They start groups. They get somebody to start a group, or they get a group that's already gone and infiltrate it, and the rest is history. Pretty soon they wrap them up just like these militia guys, you know. You're going to go to prison now for who knows how long over nothing. Didn't gain a goddamn thing. And that's the way they like to deplete our energy. So please don't fall into their traps and stay out of these right-wing racist groups, I'll tell you. And another thing, just from my point of view, keep the pornographic and genocidal book called the Bible out of your kids' hands and keep them out of your hands, unless you just want to research a little bit. And stay out of these mind control centers they call churches, which are nothing but modified synagogues. You do that and you'll be okay. One more thing that's going to piss off the right wing. Stay out of this Hitler worship crap. I mean, it's over, it's gone, it's done, and they lost. And if you'll study the war carefully, you'll see how Hitler fucked it up so bad. He fucked it up at Dunkirk. He really screwed it up at Stalingrad. He fired 35 generals just before Stalingrad. And then he changed his mind about five times and switched his forces around. He turned them away from Stalingrad to the Caucasus to get the oil, the oil fields. And then he changed his mind down there, said, run them back to Leningrad. If they'd let the generals handle it, they'd have been in Moscow early on. It'd have been over. But he screwed up the whole thing. So, and his views on race are not exactly what should be the views on race either. That's for sure. Because white people are white people. We're not going to discriminate against any white person, you know. I mean, unless they're race mixers and stuff like that. We got a lot of people on the right wing. Not we, but there are a lot of people in the right wing that all they do is research World War II, World War II, Hitler this, oh, he was this, he was that, no, he was this, no, he was that. It's over. Forget about it. We're in a fight for our life right now. Right now. not 50, 60 years ago, man. That's over. And that was sort of a put-up game anyhow. And don't concentrate all your argument on the Jews, for Christ's sake. You know, you got these white Christians that are many times even worse than the Jews, and there's more of them. And so people that concentrate totally on the Jews, I don't trust at all. Either they're stupid or they're false flaggers, you know. Like, or they contemplate on communism or socialism or that, when predatory capitalism is doing even more damage than those other isms because it's in power and they got the money and they got the banks and everything else. So what do you, sitting around worrying about a few Reds or a few socialists. Actually, Aryan socialism is good, and you should look into it. And so many of these right-wing racialists, National Socialists, they say they're National Socialists. They're Hollywood National Socialists. They don't know anything about real socialism. But they're also, most of those people are voting Republican. Well, that don't even make sense. The Republicans hate socialism, so they'd hate National Socialism, but they hate socialism, period. Look at the way they're going after poor old Bernie Sanders. He's a socialist. Bullshit. Most of this country's run on socialism now, you know? And Roosevelt surely injected tremendous amount of socialism. He did it to save capitalism. That's the only difference. If he hadn't injected socialism to save capitalism, there'd have been a revolution. One thing good about getting old and not having to punch a clock anymore, I can say any goddamn thing I feel like saying. If anybody doesn't like it, I could give a damn less. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm just putting it out there. Well, last week, I guess, it was that the president visited the Muslim houses of worship. He says, like houses of worship across our country, it's a place where families come together to pray to the spooks in the sky, but also a school where students learn and a health clinic that serves those in need. My visit was a chance to celebrate the contributions of the Muslim Americans to making our country every day, and to reaffirm our commitment to freedom of religion. I think you mean license of religion, tax-free religion. Our founders, white men, knew that religious liberty is essential not only to protect religion, but also religion helps strengthen our nation. Well, no, I don't think it does. But anyhow, what it does is, what the Founding Fathers meant, the freedom of at least the Christian religion, and the freedom from anybody to be dictated to by a church, was part of that, or a lot of it. So he tries to include the women's rights, civil rights. Men and women of faith have often helped move our nation closer to the founding ideals. It's all horseshit. It's all horseshit, and he knows it. No, you get all these religions coming into any country, and you're going to develop confusion and fighting and even warfare at different points. Look at the Middle East, just different factions of one religion. So you bring them in here, and you get a whole bunch of them in here, and there goes your culture. It goes your culture. And so he's a false flag. You know, he's a nigger and he's a false flag. He's not even good for his own people. But he's backed up by plenty of white people who are pushing this kind of stuff. Bring them all in here. You know, well, wait till you get 50 different religions in here going strong, tax-free, and see what happens. Come on, George. Come on, George, tell him. Well, are you going to tell him or ain't you?
Like I say, there's enough bullshit as it is. In fact, there's just enough. Did you know that? There's just enough bullshit in this country to hold things together. Bullshit is the glue that binds us as a nation.
Tell them, George!
Where would we be without our safe, familiar American bullshit?
Hallelujah!
Land of the free, home of the brave, the American dream. All men are equal, justice is blind, the press is free, business is honest, the good guys win, your vote counts, the police are on your side, God is watching you. Your standard of living will always improve. And everything is going to be just fine. The official national bullshit story. I call it the American okey-doke. Everyone, Every one of those items is provably untrue at one level or another, but we believe them because they're pounded into our heads from the time we're children. That's what they do with that kind of thing. Pounded into the heads of kids because they know the children are much too young to be able to muster an intellectual defense against a sophisticated idea like that. And they know that up to a certain age, children believe everything their parents tell them. And as a result, they never learn to question things. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Nobody questions anything. Everybody's too fat and happy. Everybody's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes and rub their balls now. You know? Way too fucking prosperous for our own good. Way too fucking prosperous. Americans have been bought off and silenced by toys and gizmos.
Yeah, Obama. He's pleading for tolerance. He's pleading for tolerance. Yeah. While these drones striking all kinds of people, hundreds of thousands of people, destroying Syria. Now, Syria, that's an interesting thing because in the Bible, Syria is one of the main operating places for early Christianity and so forth. Now, you'd think the Christians would do everything they could do to protect and stabilize Syria, but the Christians are the ones who are promoting the bombing. Big time. You go to these churches, you can hear them say, we got to protect America and defend America. Well, when they say defend America, that means bombing the shit out of somebody else. They're hypocritical, that's for sure. How about this Ted Cruz? Even the only other senators don't even like the son of a bitch. Cruz is opening up about how religion has transformed his life. The Republican presidential candidate tells members of a New Hampshire congregation that his family's religious devotion is due largely to his father's conversion to Christianity decades ago. I wonder what he was before. I bet he was a Catholic, and they don't consider the Catholics Christians, I guess. The Texas senator says his father was a drunk who abandoned Cruz and his mother when Cruz was a toddler. Well, then Rafael Cruz met a pastor who challenged him to stop resisting Christianity. I love it the way people go from one drug to another. They do that all the time. They're into all kinds of drugs and alcoholism, and then they jump to the next drug, religion. Yeah. Ted Cruz tells worshipers at the First Assembly of God in Auburn, New Hampshire, that his father literally fell to his knees and gave his life to Jesus. Raphael soon returned to his family and raised Cruz as a devout Christian, and he's such a Christian today. Oh, God, these people have no shame, no shame at all. Well, you can sleep sound tonight because all these Republican candidates and I guess the Democrats, too, they're all believing in pushing the spooks in the sky and no taxes for the churches. Actually, Lenin had a better view of handling the churches. He said, well, Lenin said, we won't destroy the churches, we just won't fund them. Don't give them tax money. Don't feed their budgets. And you'd see religion be collapsing very quickly. Not altogether, no. But Lenin realized, unfortunately, he was killed before he could do anything about it, but to not interfere with the churches, just don't fund them. See, the state had always funded them. Even during the National Socialist rule in Germany, the National Socialist state was funding the churches. At the same time, Himmler was building Odinist-type training schools, which were, you know, atheists, really. They were doing both things at once. Well, at least we know now there's some black people that have some brains. Nairobi, Kenya, a group of atheists are accusing the government of discrimination after the authorities turned down a request to register their organization. The group of 60 had applied for the registration under the Atheists in Kenya, but earlier this week found out their registration had been rejected because of fears the atheists would disrupt peace and disorder. 60 people would disrupt peace and disorder? Well, if Christianity is not any stronger than that, they better quit.
Honda of Fishers just made your Honda buy this
morning. State lawmakers are considering a bill that would designate hate crimes in Indiana.
Indiana is one of five states that currently do not have hate crime laws. 24-hour News 8's Evan Johnson is just outside the State House and joined us live to explain the bill at this point. Evan, good morning.
Good morning. Senate Bill 220 has passed the state Senate in a 34-16 vote. It's now up for consideration in the state House, and this comes as lawmakers are under scrutiny for not passing civil protections for the LGBT community. The bill is authored by a Republican and a Democrat, and it would allow the court to consider tougher sentences for anyone convicted of a crime that is motivated by a person's age, race, religion, sexual orientation, or gender identity. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, there are nearly a dozen hate groups currently active in the Hoosier State. State police say since 2011, there have been 45 to 55 incidents each year that would have qualified as a hate crime. Not everyone, however, is in support of a hate crime law here in Indiana. Some are saying it doesn't matter why a crime was convicted. The point is, a crime is a crime. About 1 week ago, state lawmakers killed a bill that would have added civil rights protections for lesbians, gays, and bisexual people. That bill did not include protections for transgender Hoosiers. Now, it's interesting to note that if this bill becomes Indiana law, then the state will become the 18th state to include the words gender identity and sexual orientation in a hate crime law. Currently, the other states that currently have hate crime laws, they do not have those words in the laws. Lauren?
Well, I guess Morris Deese has come to town here in Indiana, and that's good. That's good. Pass all the goddamn laws you want, but it's not going to stop what's coming in the future in this country. Now, do you notice the only people that escape this is or don't benefit by this, supposedly, is the white heterosexual working man. The rich, they have no problem getting out of it. So now you've got the homosexuals, the lesbians, the cross-dressers, and Christ, I don't know how many more they can put on this thing. But it won't work. It'll create more hatred. This type of stuff creates more hatred. People don't seem to understand it. So sure, they jail a few people, but they're not going to get that many. But people are going to get more and more and more pissed off about this kind of stuff. You don't believe me? Just wait a while. It's simmering. The pot is simmering. Now, I may be gone by the time it boils over, but it'll boil over, believe me. So thanks, Morris Sleaze Deese. You think that I'm going to be pissed off about this? No. Pour it on, baby. Pour it on. Well, that black U.S. Attorney General that can't seem to find the heart to go after Hillary. Yeah. Loretta E. Lynch, apropos name, the first African-American, Negro-American woman to helm the nation's chief prosecutorial office, and it don't make any difference, addressed hundreds of Maryland residents, mostly black, and of course a cadre of whites, and political leaders Saturday morning at a breakfast commemorating Black History Month, touting the Justice Department's crackdown on hate crimes and its fight to protect voting rights. Why? You're not stopping anything by protecting voting rights. The crookedest thing in the country is voting. So everybody's wanting to fight to vote. That shows you another reason blacks are stupid. They're going to fight to vote. Come on, Massa, put those chains on my legs. Let me vote. Let me vote. That's going to solve things, just like electing a nigger president helped you out. Well, I'm going to continue today with the origins of the Aryans. And we can never say for sure whether it's absolutely correct or not. It was written back in 1880. Now, whether we have gained more knowledge of the Aryan since then or lost knowledge of the Aryan is a good question. But these variations may possibly have been from another origin. The Negro is essentially the man of the South, the developed scion of the African or the Australasian tropics. The Mongolian is the man of the North, his native region being the chill tablelands of Northern Asia, so far as the balance of interactions go. Whether these two races with their specific differences arose as a distinct species in these widely separated localities and spread outward toward, from these centers of dispersion until they met and ultimately mingled at their borders, or whether they indicate some very early division of a single human species into two sections and variations under differing climatic influences, are questions which science is not yet prepared to answer. It is unquestionable that their well-marked and strongly persistent physical characteristics are the outcome of a very long period of separate development. If there was a single primitive type man, its two main divisions must have been long exposed to a very diverse condition of climatic and life habits, and its separation must have taken place at a very early era in human existence, perhaps as suggested by Professor Wallace, at that primitive epoch when men were not as yet too low in mind to combat against the influences of nature and were far more plastic to the agency of natural selection than they have been during the later epoch of weapons, clothing, and habitation. If we now come to the consideration of the Caucasian race, we have to deal with a series of facts markedly distinct from those relating to the other two races named. In the Caucasian, we certainly have not a primitive and homogeneous type mankind, but a race of varied mixture and of much more recent origin, and therefore necessarily not a distinct species of man, but a derivative from primitive man. In support of this view, an argument of some cognacy can be offered. The opening of the historical era presents the three races above indicating in very different relations to those which now obtain. At the earliest date to which we can trace them, the Mongolian and the Negro, with their subtypes and hybrid races, divided the major part of the earth between them. Hardly a foothold was left for the Caucasians. Great part of Africa and many Pacific islands were occupied by the Negro race. Others of these islands, all of America and nearly all of Asia, were accompanied by peoples of the Mongoloid type. As far as Europe, late research has given us some very interesting information concerning its early inhabitants. There is reason to believe that it has been successfully occupied by sections of the three principal human races, and that its general occupancy by Caucasian reaches not very remotely beyond the historical era. The skull is the truest index of human races, and the ancient skulls found by modern man in Europe tell us much concerning the early ethnological conditions. The most ancient of these skulls belong to long-headed, strongly protonaceous race, with characteristics of a lower type than are found in existing man. This, called by Quatrefages and Constant race, boy, they got some big words in here, including the famous Neanderthal skull with its brute-like characteristics. Other skulls of apparently later date constitute the so-called Cro-Magnon race. These are also an approach nearer to the Negro than to any other of the existing types. That's the Neanderthal. It is not impossible that a modified branch of the Negro race had spread itself over the Western Europe at this period, early period. Still later appear the skulls of men of quite different race characteristics. These range from medium to short heads, while the accompanying skeletons are of short stature and present certain traces of affinity to the modern Laps. It is probable that the long-headed, possible Negroid earlier race had been driven back by Mongolian migration, which in Neolithic age became widely distributed. There are apparently two types of which the medium skull. One may be, to some extent, a cross between the long-headed Aborigines and the intruding short-headed race. I'm going to stop this right now because this is getting too complicated. I think it may later on in this book it may get quite interesting, but right now it's getting to be a pain in the ass as far as I'm concerned. Well, I'm going back to Might is Right. How about that? But equality before the law is all we mean, whimpers the everlasting sophist, the cunning liar. Let us see. By what rational method can any two litigants be placed in a position of unconditional equality before the law? First of all, plaintiff and defendant always possess totally different physical and mental characteristics, different personal magnetisms, and different sized bank balances. Also, all judges, juries, and legal officials are unequals in the temperament, ability, courage, and honesty. Each one has his own peculiar idiosyncrasies, prejudices, inferiorities, superstitions, and price. Each, again, may be more or less dishonest and more or less subject to financial pressure or caste bias. No two men are born alike, each one being literally born under his own particular star, formed by different materials, swayed by different ideals, educated and molded in a different mill by different processes. Even if all tribunals of justice were founded upon blind impartiality and administered free of cost, it will be plainly seen that equality before the law remains a mere con, a dream and of no real value. Equality before the law is just a meaningless catchword, something like that famous Jesuitism, liberty regulated by law. Well, even any lawyer will tell you a court is not for justice. A court is an arbitrary and capricious and battleground, whoever wins, not what's justice. Statute law may formally confer equal rights and privileges upon unequal citizens, but it cannot enforce itself. It must execute its mandate through human media, and that media is full up to the brim with superiorities, inferiorities, and inequalities. No legalism has ever been devised that strength cannot drive its coach and fore through. And it is a popular proverb in all lands that somehow there is one law for the rich and another for the poor. Indeed, the poor can never be placed upon an equality with the rich, not even by the pillage of the rich. Whether they are the fittest or not, the present proprietors of wealth should never permit themselves to be plundered without a savage struggle. And that's what they're doing. Sooner or later, the hour of the struggle in its acute form shall arrive, but the rich must not dread it. If they prepare in time, the result shall not only justify their mastership, but render it impregnable, if they are fit, to be suspected, to be respected and secure. Aristocracies must rest themselves upon the sordid might, not upon paper credits, consuls, and bond issues. Well, should the opulence be conquered and pillaged, that in itself will be conclusive evidence that they are neither the fittest nor the best. Upon this earth there is no such thing as an equal justice. In other words, the rich can be overcome. All legal tribunals are based not upon ideal concepts of justice and fair play, but upon effective armed strength. In other words, the rich control the military. This is a truism. Robbery under arms laid the cornerstone of every courthouse in the Christendom and elsewhere. How then can the robbers and the robbed, the eagle and the pigeon, the chicken and the hawk, be placed in positions of genuine equilibrium before removable officials specifically paid and appointed to vindicate the law, that is, to give forcible effect to the dicta of the strongest? All judges are authorized avengers, armed to the teeth, and all hangmen are licensed assassins, trained to kill. These words are not spoken in disparagement. Assassins and avengers? Ha! If that be so. Truly, they who seek the Lord do suffer hunger, but the lions seek the prey. Pray! Well, that's right now. See, what's a joke is that the federal courts support the little guy. The federal courts have never supported little guys. Federal courts defend the system. That's what they're there for. You got, what, 10 or 12 of them? Federal courts? They're there to protect the system. And it's an ironic, cruel joke when these constitutionalists try to go to court to implement the Constitution, if it's at loggerheads with the powers that be. The court is there to protect the powers that be. It's not going to allow the average person ever to go in there and defeat them. When an army of occupation settles down upon an enemy's territory, it issues certain rules of procedure for the orderly transference of property and persons of the conquered into absolute possession and unlimited control of the conquerors. These rules of procedure may at first take shape as orders issued by military generals, but after a time they develop themselves into statute books, precedents, and constitutions. Indeed, all law is now and ever has been the mandate of successful belligerents, or rather the mandate of a few masterful personalities that ever inspire them. Equality before the law is, thus, a contradiction in terms, for law itself is an incarnation of inequality. It is true only in the subjective sense that all who obey the law are equally the servants of those who make it or cause it to be made. Drumhead court-martials are really law courts in embryo. Congresses and parliament are merely committees of rapacious tax gatherers. Legislators may describe themselves as representatives of the people, but that is only a cunning masquerade. Their chief vocation is to strengthen the law, uphold the Constitution, vote the annual appropriations, and devise ways and means of exploiting the nation or of permitting it to be systematically looted by their accomplices or their masters. Is it reasonable, therefore, for a confederation of masterful bandits to place themselves into positions of absolute equality before their intended victims? The idea is absurd on the face of it. Brigandage, necessities, inequality, and every government on earth is organized and enthroned brigandage, or thievery. Las Casas, the Spanish Jesuit, was the first in America to spread about the false, subversive, and shameful theory of equal human rights, but since his time it has been boastfully accepted on all sides by vast hordes of witless persons who are in all countries the numerical majority. The race of fools, as Plato sagaciously remarked, is not to be counted, not even in this land of the free. Although equality in any shape has never been scientifically proven nor logically defended, nevertheless it passes from tongue to tongue and from brain to brain to current discussions for gospel truth, just as clever counterfeit coins are passed unsuspectingly from hand to hand. The equality superstition is tolerated by clear-sighted men for one reason only. It assists them to govern the thoughts, and by governing the thoughts, to exploit the property, energy, and labor force of their soft-minded, good-natured neighbors who really believe it to be true, who think it. Glad tidings of joy, great joy. Behold, when the fraudulent equality of natural rights evangel is malicious poured forth in the marketplace by suave dollar-hunting attorneys or half-educated mechanics, even those staid citizens whose whole life it has been direct disproof, lead the roaring, raving, yelling crowd in its maniacal bellowings, lo, the angel of lunacy is camped in her soul. I see a footnote down here of Herbert Spencer. Have we not shown that government is essentially immoral? Every atom of organic matter has its own vital peculiarity. Every animate being is different in osseous structure and chemical composition. Ethnology, biology, history all proclaim equality to be a myth. Even the great epics of antiquity are all glorifications of inequality. Inequality of mind, inequality of birth, of courage or condition. Can equality of body and equality of mind, equality of origin, equality before the law, or any other kind of equality be demonstrated by any one fact? Mentally and morally, every breathing being is a self-poised monad, a differentiated ego. No two germs, planets, suns, stars are alike. Among the higher vertebrates, this is especially so, and consequently the only law that men ought to honor or respect is the law that originates and finds its final sanction in themselves, in their own consciousness. Inequality is summed up in the scientific axiom, inferior organisms succumb, that superior organisms may survive, propagate, and process. In other words, the proper place for Lazarus is to rot among the dogs, and the proper place for Caesar is at the head of his irresistible legions. From the soles of his feet to the crown of his head, the bones, skin, and flesh of his body, even the gray brain pulp, the electric nerves and tissues, the mental ganglia, and the internal viscera of a man belongs to the African, Mongolian, Semite, or Negrito breeds, are all fundamentally different in formation and constitutes the character from the corresponding anatomical sections in men of Aryan descent. The point of non-resemblance may be superficially imperceivable, but they are organic, deep-seated. Notwithstanding the dexterous writers of strategic fables, dross in dross, gold is gold, and some men are born better, born nobler, born braver than others. Aristocracy by birth rests upon an unalterable scientific basis of heredity and selection, but an aristocracy of money rests mainly upon bolts and bars, i.e., upon laws that may be abrogated at a moment's notice. Though unable to reason out the logical sequence, their inherited abhorrence of social and racial equality, most men instinctively detest it in practice. What white father, for example, would encourage the marriage of a hulking, thick-lipped, skulled Negro with his beautiful and accomplished daughter? Would he enthusiastically give her away? Well, now they do. To the matrimonial embraces of a Chinaman, a coolie, or the leper hugs of a polluted, mean white? Are there 10 such citizens even in North America? Well, there is now, where equality of birth and condition is so much speechified and never seen. Are there 5? Is there 1 who would not rather see the daughter of his loins stiff, dark, and cold in her shroud, dead, should that one exist, he being of sound mind, let him speak. Then and only then can these diabolical gospel of intrinsic equality be reconsidered. Well, we've gone a long ways past that. Meanwhile, plain practical citizens are justified in regarding it, not as a self-evident truth, but an insolent, malignant, and abominable lie, a lie that shall yet be stamped out forever with blood and fire. Well, it hopefully is still coming, boys and girls. You have only to look at some men to know that they belong to an inferior breed. Take the Negro, for example. His narrow cranial development, his prognathous jaw, his projecting lips, his wide nasal aperture, his simian disposition, his want of forethought, originality, and mental capacity are all peculiarities strictly inferior. Similar language may be applied to the Chinaman, the coolie, the Kanaka, the Jew, and to the rotten bone city degenerate of Anglo-Saxondom, rich and poor. Vile indeed are the inhabitants of those noxious cattle crawls, London, Liverpool, New York, Chicago, New Orleans, and yet these places is heaped up with golden plunder of the world. Ethnographists of the very high authority assert that over 10,000 years ago, the black, white, and yellow types of man animals were as pronounced and as inefficiently as they are today. Their hieroglyphics and records of ancient tombs and monuments, cuneiforms and inscriptions, antiquarian researches and systematic study of prehistoric skulls and skeletons all bear the same uniform testimony. Inequality of birth and condition can never perish off the earth. Never. It may get against the ropes, but it's never going to disappear. And why should it? Who can fill the valleys up and lay the mountains low? Even the giddy doctrinaire who so cunningly concocted the bombastic, furious fictions of the Declaration of Independence cover not apparently have believed them himself. Was he not a slave driver residing among slave drivers who bought and auctioned human cattle for dollars and cents all the days of his life? No doubt of purposes of statecraft and necessary warcraft, he wove his philosophic preamble of strong deceit. Probably also he was comparatively honest and even sincere, but among the alluring priests of unreason, the most dangerous is the fanatical propagandist. When Jefferson dictated his fatal, untenable abstractions, he was not even original. He plagiarized Zeno, the Stoic, Jack Cade, Savonarola, Milton, Plato, John Ball, and so forth. Zeno said, what did he say? Zeno said, men are by nature equal, but carefully refrained from attempting to demonstrate it. Milton defended it in his prose essays. Plato voiced it in his Republic. John Ball preached it in medieval England. Savonarola perished trying to establish it in Florence. Jack Cade, Robespierre, and Christ were also failures, ghastly failures. If human experience proves anything at all, writes Fitz James Stevens, it proves that if the restraints are minimized, if the largest possible measure of liberty is accorded to all human beings, the result will not be equality, but inequality reproducing itself on a geometric ratio. That's what will happen again here in the Western world. Remove the restraints and see how quickly an aristocracy based on merit would mow down an aristocracy based on credit. In actual life, he who claims equality with one another is ever called upon to prove his claim, not by a grotesque abracadabra of silly phrases parroting from antique philosophers or blue-moldy documents, but by actual deeds, that is to say, by producing his credentials. Constitutional theories are all very well to humbug, strident slaves, but in a free man's household or business, they are not legal tender. Among men of affairs, natural egalitarianism is regarded as amusing moonshine, mere spread eagleism, fit for public meetings only. Business minds thoroughly understand, having learnt by bitter experience, that some men are destined to, by nature, bear command, and some obey, even for the 1,000 years before their birth. No one can study the laborers on a farm, the hands in a big foundry or factory, the seamen in a large seaport, the nomadic hirelings of a railroad construction gang, or the clerks and salesmen in a city warehouse without perceiving at a glance that the vast majority of them are extremely poor specimens of humanity. The ideal type of manhood or womanhood, that is to say, yea, thoroughbred, is not to be found among these captive hordes, for captives they really are. Their heads are, to a large extent, unsymmetrical, their features distorted, ape-like, unintelligent. Their bodies are out of all proportion, dwarf, stunted, diseased, and malformed cretins. Their movements are contracted, artificial, ungainly, and their minds outside of routine are utter vacuums. When compared with the traditional idea of strength, beauty, courage, and nobleness of character, they are an extremely ill-bred herd of cattle, exhibiting all the philosophical stigmata of inheritance, rain rot on physical decay, a crown of thorns on every brow. That is the wage they're earning now. 9/10 of them are positively repulsive in language, mentality, and general appearance. They even display an extraordinary low average of animality, and upon the slightest exposure perished off, like sheep that have lungworm. Heated rooms, woolen clothing, and simulated beverages are the means whereby their watery blood is kept in languid circulation. Every new generation is feebler and more debased than its predecessor. All scientific evidences of mental, moral, bodily deterioration are marked, accentuated in them, and their timidity is proverbial. Hard, continuous, methodical labor destroys courage, saps vitality, and demoralizes character. It tames the subdues men, just as it tames and subdues the wild steer or the young colt. Men who labor hard and continuously have no power to think. It requires all their vital force to keep their muscles in trim. Well, that's about it for now. Some you may agree with, and some you may disagree with. But one thing we know, equality is bullshit. And liberty is pretty much so, too. Democracy is a fraud. And so on and so on and so on. So you can eliminate a whole bunch of the stuff you struggle against and worry about, because it's never gone anywhere. And in some ways, we just have to wait them out and then come up the other side as ruthless barbarians. So anyhow, that's my opinion for the day. I'll be out of here, and I'll be back tomorrow on Tuesday. 14:05 and 5 words. I have nothing to say.